The work environment steadily deteriorated as a result of the change in the makeup of the committee, until eventually things were as bad as they had ever been. In exchange for our autonomy, we made arrangements with Boris concerning our production quarters, which became increasingly onerous. The quota was raised in stages, under one pretext or another, until finally the work forced upon us became harsher than ever. The number of accidents also escalated, and many Japanese soldiers lent their bones to the soil of a foreign land. Victims of reckless mining practices. Autonomy meant only that we Japanese now had to oversee our own labor in place of the Russians who had once done it. Discontent, of course, only blossomed among the prisoners of war. Where we had once had a little society that shared its sufferings equally, a sense of unfairness grew, and with it deep hatred and suspicion. Those who served Boris were given lighter duties and special privileges, while those who did not had to live a harsh life, if allowed to live at all. No one could raise his voice in complaint, for open resistance meant death. One might be thrown into an icy shed to die of cold and starvation, or have a wet towel pressed over one's face while asleep, or have the back of one's skull split open with a pick while working in the mine. Down there, you could end up at the bottom of a shaft. Nobody knew what went on in the darkness of the mine. People would just disappear. I couldn't help feeling responsible for having brought Boris and the Colonel together. Of course, if I hadn't become involved, Boris would have burrowed his way in among us sooner or later by some other route with similar results. But such thoughts did little to ease my pain. I had made a terrible mistake. One day I was summoned to the building that Boris used as his office. I had not seen him for a very long time. He sat at a desk, drinking tea, as he had been doing the time I saw him in the station master's office. Behind him, standing to attention with a large caliber automatic pistol in his belt, was the Tatar. When I entered the room, Boris turned around to the Mongolian and signaled for him to leave. The two of us were alone together. "So then, Lieutenant Mamiya, I have kept my promise, you see?" "Indeed he had," I replied. "What he said was unfortunately true. Everything he had promised me had come to pass. It was like a pact with the devil."
"You have your autonomy, and I have my power,"
he said with a smile, holding his arms out wide.
"We both got what we wanted. Coal production has increased, and Moscow is happy. Who could ask for anything more? I am very grateful to you for having acted as my mediator, and I would like to do something for you in return."
"There was no such need," I replied.
"Nor is there any need for you to be so distant, Lieutenant. The two of us go way back," said Boris, smiling. "I want you to work here with me. I want you to be my assistant. Unfortunately, this place has a critical shortage of men who can think. You may be missing a hand, but I can see that your sharp mind more than makes up for it. If you will work as my secretary, I would be most grateful and will do everything I can to see that you have as easy a time of it here as possible. That way, you will be sure to survive and make your way back to Japan. Working closely with me can only do you good."
Ordinarily, I would have rejected such an offer out of hand. I had no intention of selling out my comrades and securing an easy time of it for myself by working as Boris's assistant. And if turning him down meant that he would have me killed, that would have suited me fine. But the moment he presented his offer, I found a plan forming in my mind. "What kind of work do you want me to do?"